The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket, it just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
Now Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio. A downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast, Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Are you still at SNL? You're still receptionist?
Yeah, I am. You're listening to Kevin Nealon, and this is Spike, Spike's Car Radio. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Spike.
I am still the receptionist of Saturday Night Live.
Yes. That's where we first met.
I feel like that when I sit across from you. I interviewed Dennis Miller not too long ago, and I had the same feeling. You get kind of nervous because I'm still I'm the 54-year-old intern.
Are you 54?
I'm 54.
No, there's nobody named Spike that's 54. That's like a kid's name, Spike. But, you know, it's funny. You kind of remember the person for what they were doing when you first met them.
What do you remember about me?
Well, you were, you know, a good receptionist. You were very ambitious, and, you know, you had a lot of talent. You know, potential. But I mean, I was a bartender at the Improv for a couple of years.
Really?
And so, you know, there was like heavy duty management companies that started seeing me when I started doing stand up and getting, you know, better at it. And they come backstage and they say, I thought you were just a bartender. I didn't even know you did stand up.
And that's what you thought about me. You thought I was just the receptionist. I had gone to receptionist school. And
No, but I remember. I mean, I've met a lot of people and I don't remember what they did for jobs when I first met them.
Right.
You know, but for you, I remember.
Yeah.
Because you've done so well.
That's season 13 of Saturday Night Live.
Was it really?
That's Dana Carvey, Nora Dunn, Phil Hartman, Jan Hooks, Victoria Jackson, John Lovitz, Dennis Miller, yourself. That's new writer or featured player, Ben Stiller. Do you remember what he was?
Yeah, he was a featured player, I think. By the way, talk about knowing people when they had their like earlier jobs. I was a bartender at the Improv for 2 years, and Les Moonves was a bartender in the back in the showroom, service
and
bar.
How was he back then?
He was busy. He was busy in the back, and I got to kind of like talk to all the people out front. He had to deal with all the waiters and waitresses, but yeah. So I still see him as a bartender.
Yeah. Well, he might be bartending these days. I think that's probably the
take
only
a break. We'll be right
place
back.
He's going to be able to work. It's funny because I wanted to ask you about this because I don't know much about you before you get into show business. I know there's a moment, I guess, in 1984 where you do The Tonight Show, and that's where you pop for the first time. I wasn't even sure what you were doing on The Tonight Show. Were you doing stand-up?
Stand-up.
Okay, so take us back even farther. Where does it start off for you? Where do you get into comedy?
Well, in a nutshell, I always loved comedy. I used to watch, you know, all the talk shows, and I would highlight the TV guide of every comic that was going to be on, George Miller or whoever, you know, all the comics back then, Stanley Myron Handelman. And I just loved.
Where is this?
This is in Connecticut.
Connecticut, okay.
In Bridgeport, Connecticut, which is a very industrial city. People think, oh, you're from Connecticut. You're very wealthy family, you know. But no, it was blue collar town. It was very, it was the Detroit of Connecticut, you know. And I would watch the comics, and I always loved comedy. And I remember the day I decided to go to Los Angeles. I was raking leaves, listening to the radio outside. I had to turn the radio up loud because, you know, when you're raking leaves, it makes a lot of noise and the ground's still a little hard, you know, from the winter. And Freddie Prinze had killed himself. And I used to watch him on The Tonight Show all the time, you know, the Hungarian. Mm-hmm. And and for some reason I thought there's an opening. There's an opening to do stand-up, you know. But no, it made me realize how important stand-up was and what an impact it was making on society.
And what did your parents do?
They've always been very supportive of me. Yeah, I went to college.
What were they doing?
What were they doing?
What did mom and dad do for a living?
My father was an aeronautical engineer, very smart.
So he loves the idea of you in stand-up comedy. He's like, perfect. This is exactly what I was thinking for my son.
Yeah. In hindsight, I they told me they were a little nervous for me. Mm-hmm. But I went out to L.A. with a friend of mine. And I always kidded back then. I said, I moved to L.A. to pursue a career in part-time jobs. Because that's what you do when you're doing stand-up. You get a lot of part-time jobs. And my friend John and I moved to San Diego for a couple months because we wanted to check that out. And we became department store Santa Clauses for 2 months, July and August. No, it was November, December. And
is it hard to become a department store Santa? It's hobos and the unemployed, right?
Yeah.
It's anybody.
I was 24, I think, and they had the worst costumes. It was like a cotton beard. Mm-hmm. And I had black eyebrows and I was thin. And my buddy and I went bar hopping the night, like two nights before Christmas. He dressed as his Santa Claus, and I carried the candy canes and the camera. We're getting free to all these discos because mm-hmm. it was discos back then. And he met his future wife at one of the things at Santa Claus, and they moved in together, and I moved up to L.A. and just got into stand-up.
Wow.
Out of all the things I've done, and I've done a lot of things, Mike.
Yes, sir.
The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson was the highlight of my career to this point.
Right.
Because I wanted to do stand-up.
Right.
And that was my passing your bar exam if you get on with the Johnny Carson. And then I got called over to do panel with him after that. So that was a double bonus for me. And I've never had more of a natural high than after I did that and when it aired that evening. I mean, I was floating. I felt like I won the lottery.
Isn't that interesting? I hear that a lot in comedy. I even said it. I was telling someone, I was being interviewed the other day, the first joke I saw that I wrote that was on the air felt like a drug high.
Yeah.
And then we're chasing it for the rest of our lives, right? Is that what you did?
Yeah. I mean, I'll do Saturday Night Live, and then I'll say, is this better than The Tonight Show? No. I'll do Weeds. No, not better. No.
Did you ever get to socialize with Johnny Carson?
Just on panel. I remember how nervous I was going out there for the first time and walking out to my spot. I forgot my act. I couldn't remember the beginning of it.
So what do you do?
Well, by the time the audience stopped applauding, I remembered my act. And then I was so nervous. My mouth was so dry. When I smiled, my top lip stuck to my gums. And I didn't want to lick my lip because I had cotton mouth because they know I was nervous if I licked my lip. So I adjusted by bringing my lower lip up. I look like Stan Laurel.
Can we find this on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube somewhere, I think. I think it is. I mean, it's on that Johnny Carson network thing.
How exciting. And is this a time where is that a show you're watching and just dreaming of being on it at that time?
When I first came out to L.A., I would go there every day to Burbank, and I knew they'd give out tickets to everybody, and everybody got two tickets, and mm-hmm. I knew everybody wasn't using their tickets, all of them. So I would go up the line around 5, right before they started. I said, does anybody have an extra ticket? And I'd look really sympathetic. and I'd always get a ticket. So it was like going to a Vegas show every day. And so I knew the band members. I knew exactly the routine, the warm-up beforehand. Wow. So it was really kind of a dream come true. And to this day, it's been nothing like it.
You're listening to Spike Ferston and Kevin Nealon. Kevin Nealon has a new series on YouTube, Hiking with Kevin. He's also one of the stars of CBS's sitcom Man with a Plan, which is returning to the air February 4. He also does a lot of stand-up, and you can find out where he's doing stand-up at kevinnealon.com. Now, after that moment, right, you start on SNL, if I'm not mistaken, 1986 is season 12?
Yeah.
Season 12, right? How do you get from – is it that Carson spot that gets you that audition?
No. It was I was friends with Dana Carvey.
Ah.
Do you want to hear – a lot of people ask me how I got on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, yeah.
Although they phrase it more like this. How did you get on Saturday Night Live? And they're angry. I said, I know, right? The thing is, I showed up. I showed up uh-huh. for the audition when I knew I didn't think I was right for it. But so I was renting a house in Hollywood Hills with two other comics. And Dana Carvey rented the apartment over the garage when he was in town from San Francisco. And we'd run around the Hollywood Reservoir. And I knew him from the clubs. And we were friends. And we'd kind of be in the driveway sometimes. And we'd jam on character ideas and impressions and stuff. Not that I wasn't an impressionist, mm-hmm. but. And so Dana got the show that summer. And also Jan Hooks, my girlfriend at the time, was up for it.
So you were dating before? Oh, I thought that was a romance that happened season 13.
I met Jan Hooks on an audition. I think it was at 20th Century Fox for some half-hour comedy show. And I was bedazzled by her talent and her, you know, her beauty. And and we just hit it off. I don't usually ask people for their phone number. I'm very shy and I don't want to be rejected. But somehow I got her phone number. And we never dated for 6 years. We just became really good friends. We go to happy hours. And then she'd always go off on a date with a writer guy, you know, some loser guy. And then she'd always come back to me as a friend.
Right.
And I accepted that. And I became friends with her for 6 years. And then one night we went out to the Palomino Club in North Hollywood. And we both had a couple of beers. And the next thing I know, we're involved romantically, you know, for a year before SNL. So I was excited for her that she was about to, you know, hopefully be on that show. And then Dana got selected to be on it.
And then how were you feeling at that moment, though? Were you like, God, it's happening for everybody else but me?
No, I wasn't even – I never even thought about going. It wasn't even an aspiration of mine to be on that show.
Is there a limited amount of funny people in the world at that moment that this, just this cluster?
No, there was plenty of people. I mean,
you guys are all together and you're all going to the same place. I mean, that's a remarkable
coincidence. I mean, when you go to the Groundlings and see all the talented people, there are Second City that actually do sketch comedy and characters and stuff. And I'm a stand-up. I'm just a stand-up, a really good stand-up.
Right.
So here's what happened. I got a call from Dana. He goes, and that summer. He goes, Kev, I'm out at Lorne Michaels' house. And I'm against it. Guess who's in the kitchen? Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd. I said, you're kidding me. He goes, no. Anyway, they're looking for one more cast member. And I told Lauren about you, and I think he's going to see your tapes. I said, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd are in the kitchen? I wasn't even hearing that other stuff. He goes, yeah, someone's coming. I got to go. So he hangs up. So I send him my tapes, not thinking anything will come of it because, you know, I'm not going to get that show.
Right. And these are half-inch tapes with you doing stand-up,
these are VHS tapes.
VHS tapes, okay.
That are still in my garage, by the way. So 2 weeks later, I get another call from Dana. Kev, I'm back out of Lorne Michaels' house. Guess who's in the kitchen? Steve Martin. I said, you're kidding me. He goes, no. Anyway, Lorne, like your tapes. I think they're going to fly you in for an audition. I said, Steve Martin's in the kitchen? He goes, yeah. And someone's coming. I got to go. So, you know, I fly in to New York, never thinking that I'll ever get it. I'm just showing up. It's a free trip to New York. I fly in and everybody else on the plane is auditioning for that same one part. You know, I mean, these are great, you know, great actors and, you know, funny people from the Groundlings. And I get there and we go to 30 Rock, Studio 8H. And I can't believe I'm there. Everybody else is nervous. I'm not, because I'm not going to get it. Mm-hmm. I do my little stand up in front of Lauren and Dana and Nora.
And what did you just did your act?
I did some of my act and some of the characters Dana and I used to do in the driveway of our house.
And you remember any of those?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember I did two of them. One was called A Couple of Sammies. And these are two guys down in the basement, kind of like a Wayne's World, early Wayne's World. And we wore, I think, Chicago Cubs, jerseys from the baseball team. And we had Chinese food and we're eating and watching TV and we're big dreamers and we never did anything. We said, you know what I want to do one day, Sammy? What do you want to do, Sammy? We're both called Sammy. He goes, one day I want to build a boat. You know, I want to sail it around the world. And then I want to stop. Whoa, who am I kidding? That's another thing I'm never going to do. Hand me some of that dim sum squad. Will you do me? To this day, Dennis Miller still calls me Sammy from when he says, hey, Sammy, from that sketch. The other one was two porno actors in the makeup room. Before their porno scene. And they're just, it's just small talk, you know, they're just talking about their day and they have the makeup artists that are making up their genitals and stuff. And, you know, it's like, hey, you know what I think? When we went bowling yesterday, it was a great day. Oh, that's nice, Trudy. Put some pinstripes down there for the people. Make it nice for the people. That was kind of the catchphrase. Make it nice for the people. You know? Right. And then it was back to the conversation, you know? Yeah, put some sparkles and some, fluff that up a little bit over there. But anyway, you know, so I think if you take your car in tomorrow, you know, you should get a good deal. Yeah, some more pinstripes around the side would be nice. So
that's
that was
great.
That's what I threw out
and
there.
But that's a two-man thing. Did you just improvise your side of it?
Yeah.
And do you remember feeling nervous? I mean, that's probably the scariest little room to perform in, right?
Well, I was at that particular time for the auditions, I was standing on the floor. I remember I was on the floor of Studio 8H, and they were sitting at the end of the bleachers.
Right, okay.
Watching.
But that was it. So it's three or four people, right?
No. It was Lorne. It was Marcy Klein.
Right.
Remember Marcy?
Boy.
And it was Dennis, John Lovitz, Nora Dunn, A. Whitney Brown, Dana,
Oh, yeah. Amy
and I think that was about it.
So maybe you're getting laughs from your other comedian types, right?
Yeah.
They seem like they would be generous.
They were
with
very
their
supportive.
Laughter, so that's
and,
good.
And also, it was that, you know, you talk about how small a world it is with Jan Hooks and Dana and me all getting. Lauren, because of the previous year, it wasn't doing so well. There was no synergy
right,
or chemistry.
Right.
So he was looking for chemistry now between
wow,
people.
And
we knew
go.
Each other.
Yeah.
So I fly back to, you know, Los Angeles. And 2 weeks later, I find myself sitting in front of Lorne Michaels in a high rise. He's offering me job on Saturday Night Live because I showed up basically and I said, let me think about it over the weekend, Lorne. You know, I was trying to I knew that was the last time I'd have any power over him. And he saw right through it. He goes, well, you think about it over the weekend. I'll see you in New York on Monday. Next thing I know, I'm at Lorne Michaels' house. I'm in his kitchen. I get a call from Dana Carvey. Kevin, back at Lorne Michaels' house. Guess who's in the kitchen? I said, I'm in the kitchen now, tough guy. I'm in the kitchen.
There you go. What a great story. Wow. That's fantastic. That's
yeah.
really great. What a great – I mean, that's – You know, there were so many things that happened that year. There's so many interesting – I wanted to get to more of the writers on the staff. Conan O'Brien is a writer. Bob Odenkirk, Robert Smigel, Greg Daniels was Conan's partner who went on to do The Office. A. Whitney Brown, Jack Handy.
Yeah.
Deep Thoughts. Where's Jack these days? I hear from him occasionally. I think he's up in
he's
Portland.
He's fly fishing, I think, yeah. in Wyoming somewhere.
George Myers went on to run The Simpsons and do really well. And
yeah.
I hear he lives on a private island.
Does he?
He invested – remember back – Back then, he was always saying, we got to invest in gold. You got to
yeah,
invest
yeah, right,
in gold.
Right.
And he was right. Gold was about $40 an ounce. And I think he just kept investing in gold, and it went up to $3,000. And now he has an island. He has an island.
Is it made out of gold?
It's not.
He would always, he would get nervous about the show. He goes, show dying.
Oh,
show
yeah.
dying.
That's right.
And there was also Andy Breckman and Jim Downey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. Andy Breckman, I forgot.
Jim Downey was the head writer.
Here were some of the guests that season. Steve Martin was our lead guest. But in the middle there, we had Angie Dickinson, Carl Weathers, and Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember anything about these shows?
I mean, certainly do.
I remember that first show, there was a fire the night before the show. And
was that the first show? Steve Martin and Sting.
Yeah, Steve Martin and Sting.
Yeah.
And I remember going down the fire stairs with
yes.
Steve Martin going, well, this guy's not going to die. He's the star of the show.
Just, yeah, I know.
And just wondering, you know, and this is my first job in television, just wondering, is this how it works? Is this what happens? This is also the season that
– I didn't realize that was the first show.
That was the first show of the season.
So we had no rehearsal that show then, that night.
The fire, it didn't last long, did it?
Well,
it was an actual fire.
It was just
fire.
Smoke mostly, I think,
right,
an electrical
right.
smoke thing. But
I, recall
but I remember sitting in the
back.
Restaurant across the street waiting to get the go-ahead to go back in, and I don't think we got back in time to have a rehearsal.
Wow.
I think we just went to the live show. But I do remember a lot of those, you know, I was always a huge Steve Martin fan. So to be working with
yeah,
him
yeah.
was amazing. And then Robert Mitchum, apparently he agreed to do the show because his granddaughter wanted to air a short film she wrote. So he agreed to do that. You know?
And that's what we aired. We.
Yeah.
That's what you guys aired?
But one of my
it was
favorite
a short film. I don't.
Yeah, it was a short film. She
and
she
was it
directed.
Funny or was it?
It was more of a black and white kind of a you know artsy kind of a thing. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think it took place in the desert.
Huh? And Robert Mitchum is that big of a get at the time?
I guess
to go,
so.
Hey, can you turn the AC up in here, Will? Having all sorts of studio issues.
So you know, Robert Mitchum, though, one of my favorite sketches I wrote was
yeah,
with Robert
go ahead.
Mitchum. And it was based on the Raymond Chandler movies he used to do. Remember when he did all the voiceover like work?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I don't know how this dame got in here, but I was going to find out. You know?
Right, right.
So I wrote a sketch with Jan Hooks, played the mall, and I was like the you know, the gangster guy. And I came into his office, and he was doing the voiceover stuff, but it wasn't voiceover. He was hiding behind a plant doing it. Or going to the bathroom. I don't know who let these crumbs into this, my office, but I was, and I'd say, "What are you doing in there? Who are you talking to?" "Huh? What? Nobody. Nobody." But anyway, I remember after that finish, Steve Martin was visiting that week, and I was a huge fan of his. He
right.
came running down. He goes, "Did you write that? That was amazing.
Oh,
I love
great.
That." And it made me feel so good.
Yeah, and that's another moment. That's what was so great about that show. I mean, it really is. You know, you look – I remember at the time everybody had this chip on their shoulder about how this – well, we're not the best cast and these aren't the best years. And everyone's comparing themselves to those first years of SNL.
Yeah.
But now when you look back, you go, my God, what an assembly of comedic talent, all of you guys.
And you too. You were the one, you know, feeding Dennis the jokes.
With my mouth
open.
But
weren't you writing Dennis jokes?
Yeah, I wrote jokes for Dennis. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember your favorite joke you wrote for him?
some joke about maybe Ed Meese. I hate these Meeses to pieces. I mean, there were there are lots of little jokes that I wrote. Any joke that got on the air was my favorite joke because it was still that high you were talking about. And I couldn't believe that I actually was contributing to this thing that I admired so much. And
I wrote a joke once before I was on SNL when I was just like, a budding stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote with Barry Martyr
for
Letterman. We both – he wrote the setup.
Wait,
the
back up. How do you know Barry Martyr?
I know Barry from stand-up.
Barry is Jerry's guy who writes Seinfeld is writing the stand-up. Right, and writes Letters from Nuts. Good friend of mine. We wrote B-movie together with Jerry.
And
Robin.
Is this funny? That's funny. You think I'm funny, don't you?
Hi,
that's Barry.
Yeah,
that's funny.
How you doing?
You know, it's Hitler's for lunch. He kind of ruined the name, didn't he?
Barry also goes to many of his favorite little lines like he'll whatever we're writing together, he'll always try to take a turn into the Bob Crane murder scene.
Because maybe when he opens the door, it's the Bob Crane murder scene. Like, what? Wait, what? Maybe we do that. I don't know, Spike.
He'll call me and goes, oh, why don't we go shopping for swimwear? Oh, don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. He's a character. I wrote up a sketch once with him as a character.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And the catchphrase was, you think I'm funny, don't you? I'm funny, right?
He is. He's kind of like Gary Shandling was in that way. He's also the very first guest on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry.
Is that right?
Yeah. If you want to see, it's surprising to see him.
He was a test run.
It's a test run, but they're still tight. They still talk every night. I know Jerry calls him constantly, and I think it's some form of really weird therapy they have together.
I have, you know.
Barry's not the most well-adjusted guy. He's just not.
I haven't seen him in years. Oh, actually, I did. I got on an airplane with – he had a heart attack like a long time ago.
Yes, he did.
And the doctor put him on like a vegan diet.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see him for like, 4 or 5 years. And I got onto an airplane and we're sitting next to each other. And he had gained some weight again.
Yep.
He gained a lot of weight. I said, Barry, I haven't seen you in a long time. How you doing? He goes, oh, I'm not too bad. The doctor wants me to get back down to my heart attack weight.
What's the thing you wrote with him?
Oh, it was just jokes. Oh, I don't. We wrote a joke for Letterman when Letterman had he was doing the Tonight Show, subbing for Johnny. I mean, I don't remember the joke, but he wrote the setup. I wrote the punchline.
Now, I used to do that for Jay when he was subbing for Johnny. I forget that Dave used to do that. Did Dave call you up to say I'd like you to write jokes?
No, Barry had like a connection to getting material to him.
He did.
Yeah.
And who was that? It wasn't
I don't know.
Dave.
Maybe he knew Dave. Maybe he knew Dave.
Wow. And did you guys get a joke on the air?
Yeah, I went on the air.
Wow. That's an exciting moment too, right?
But I don't remember the joke, and I never got paid for it. Barry kept both halves.
Or, yes.
I don't even think he told Letterman that I was a co-writer on it.
I bet Barry. Barry will hear about this, and I'm going to hear from Barry. Barry, this is your time to come clean. Do you owe Kevin
$37.50 he owes me, I think it is.
You owe him some money for that joke.
Or you know what? Maybe he paid me. But the thing that I think I remember was I don't think he told Letterman that I was like the co-writer. You know, it was like a big important thing for me back then because, you know, it was like the first time
you
got something on
that
the
air. That might be. Barry, he has a wonderful way of looking back at history and saying, well, I think I wrote all of that.
Like a lot of
writers.
I'm
just joking, Barry. Don't get –
kidding
with you.
Barry,
he and I
those...
still fight over the jokes in B-movie.
Do you really?
Each one of us wrote,
that. You think I'm funnier than you, right? He is one of those guys you can call, though. I see why Jerry calls him because I used to be on the phone with him for hours and he would just talk and write. And I remember he said if you want, I'll sell you that Bigfoot hunk. It's a hunk. That's a hunk. I could step into my showroom. Let me show you the joke. And here's a picture of Bigfoot sitting on the picnic table, and here's a picture I took of him in the woods. Here's a picture of me at the picnic table that Bigfoot took of me.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
I'll sell you that whole hunk.
Barry likes to gild the lily and then go back and fully dip the gilded lily a couple of times and more.
Yes.
Just keep
reselling.
Keep re-gilding. That's what he likes to do.
But
let me go back.
A funny guy, though. I love him.
Super funny joke machine. Yeah, we used him on my late night show, too. He's the best.
And you know who's like that, too? Was like that for me? It was Bob Einstein.
Yeah.
I would call him on the phone and talk for at least an hour and just listen to him riff. And he's so funny.
Well, tell me about that because I just know him from growing up and watching Super Dave.
Me too.
And then obviously I saw him on Curb Your Enthusiasm and on Jerry's show. And everybody that I know who's known him really, obviously very sad that he died, but really knew him as this comedy machine in a way that I couldn't see on the Super Dave episodes.
Yeah.
You know,
well, he was a head writer on the Smothers Brothers, too.
Right, there you go. Right, right, right. And Steve Martin as well was on that show.
The thing about Bob was he was so irreverent, you know, in person, and he was so inappropriate. And there were no boundaries. And he would just run with it. And you couldn't help but laugh. You know, he was just so, so funny. I remember one time I was at a golf thing with him. And I was at the, it was at the buffet afterwards. I'm coming back from the food. And I have my plate of food. And it's all vegetarian. And he sees me. And he goes, "Where's your protein?" I said, "No, I get it from the grains and stuff." He goes, "Oh, there's no protein here." He took his hands, his bare hands, and he took two handfuls of my food and he formed them into like meatball shapes and he put them back down on the plate. He goes, "There's your protein." "There's your protein." He had a high voice.
Right.
But
oh
yeah,
my God,
so
it's
fun.
Great. Yeah, I like his – I was just rewatching one of his bigger Carson spots on YouTube the other day. And it just reminded of that funny take, that funny look he gives the audience when they laugh at something he said that is funny, but he's pretending that he doesn't want them to laugh at
it. Yeah, yeah.
You know, that – you know, there's such control in that moment, right? He just approaches that guest spot in such a different way.
So dry.
So dry, and that most comedians these days do. It's more, you know, the guests more are winking and a nod and standing up and dancing for the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
He's, you know, making them laugh in a completely different way with just a little look. You know what I mean? It's really genius.
It really is. I went with Norm Macdonald once to Palm Springs for a golf clinic for like 2 or 3 days, and we come back. And we're going golfing in Malibu at that public course. And Norm brings Cato Caitlin with him, you know, from the O.J. Simpson.
Of course. Why wouldn't he?
And also Bob Einstein. So Bob is golfing with us. And he knows we just got back. We tell him all about this golf clinic and, you know, how excited we were to golf again. And every time we shanked the ball, he would go, "Is that what they taught you in golf school? Is that what they taught you in golf school?"
Did you know any of those guys, either of those guys, Cato Caitlin, or
I think
you knew
I
Bob
knew,
a little bit?
Maybe a little bit. I don't remember, but I did know him a little back then.
He didn't tell you ahead of time, "I'm bringing these guys with me"?
I knew Bob Einstein was coming, but he didn't tell me about Cato.
And you didn't worry at all about being photographed with Cato Caitlin?
And the Cato Caitlin thing was kind of still fresh. It was a couple of years later, maybe 2 years later. But he was a nice guy.
Oh, no.
He was nice. I see why he's a house guest.
Hey, what do you think, you know... are you friends with just your year, season 13, 12 cast, or is there a like fraternity, sorority of SNL members where if you see someone from the current cast walking down the street, you have this camaraderie?
Not so much with the current cast because I don't watch it that much.
Mm-hmm. Do you like watching it, or does it make you feel nostalgic and a little sad?
No, it doesn't make me feel sad. It just makes me feel exhausted. Because I know if they're in two sketches in a row, I knew they had run under the bleachers and they had their clothes torn off, you know, with a Velcro and wigs thrown on and makeup.
That's the most exciting part of being on television. I've done that. I've done that before in my late night show. I love that.
That is fun. It is exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember
the
first
countdown. But you're right. You have to be young.
You got it. Yeah. You got to have the energy. I remember the first sketch I did in that show. It was Mr. Subliminal. You know,
right?
I'd written that with Al Franken. And I was standing there, and we're coming back from commercial. It's my first sketch ever. Mm-hmm. It's Saturday Night Live, Studio 8H. And I'm pretty nervous. And Lauren comes up next to me. 5 seconds later, he puts his hand on my shoulder. He goes, "Are you sure this is what you want?"
Now, Mr. Salamino, I thought, took a little while to get on the air, didn't it? Isn't that something you put up in a few
No, it was the first show.
It was the first show.
Yeah.
Okay. And Hans and Franz, that's the first instance of a Hans and
Franz. That was
the
second year.
That's the second year, season 13.
Yeah. Though. So
that's my first year.
Right.
Is also Hans and Franz. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, because you kind of came in with Hans and Franz, right? You
guys auditioned
together?
Yeah, they brought me in for Hans and Franz. Answer phones for Hans and Franz.
Yeah, hello. But, I see some of those people. I'm friends with, like, Chris Redd, who's on the show now, and Melissa Villaseñor.
Mm-hmm.
Doing a hike with her tomorrow, actually. I remember... Colin Jost, when he was first about to start, I was talking to him a little bit about catchphrases, you know.
Like how about him locking down Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty big move. Hey, Will, I'm hearing some big noise in here. Is there, somebody's yelling or having a loud conversation.
Outside? Okay.
Anyway, I love to leave all this stuff in.
So, but yeah, but yeah. Scarlett, I don't know how he locked her down.
It's amazing, huh?
Yeah.
Isn't that fantastic? Doesn't that give you hope when you see stuff like that? Do you remember Norm MacDonald, Nell McPherson?
Yeah.
That's when I went, I know I'm in the right place. I know I need to be in show business.
See, I would never have the nerve to like even approach that.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing. But,
right.
You know, in hindsight, now looking at this now, you think, oh, I guess girls like it when you mess that up. You know?
That's why we got into entertainment, for that little advantage we did not have in our small New England towns, right?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, you know,
I'm sure Connecticut was like Massachusetts.
Yeah, sure. What town did you grow up in?
West Bridgewater, Massachusetts, south of Boston, about 30 miles.
Sure.
Population of 6,000. We had rivers and canoes and dairy farms and gun racks and
Native
crap
Americans,
like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys bigger than me that played football that, you know, kept me in my place.
That made you funny.
Maybe.
But how old is your youngest son or kid?
I have a boy who's about your age, your son's age.
My age.
No, yeah. Who's 10 years old.
Okay.
Born right around the same time. I think January 30th. I was looking, you know, I've done a little research on you.
My son will be 12 on January 29th.
There you go. Right.
But I'm thinking about writing him a letter.
Yep.
In case something happens to
me
about women.
Okay.
You know, and I think what I've learned is, you know, if you want to meet a woman who is, you know, has a great personality, first of all, and is together, but also it'd be nice if she was beautiful. But don't be fooled by the beautiful women, you know, because if they've been beautiful since school, you want to find a girl that was not really a knockout in high school or in college.
Mm-hmm.
And then she grew into the beauty, because the beautiful women have always had people do things for them. And they've had... not always, but kind of an easy life.
Yeah.
You know, where guys were just, you know, whatever they want. And so they're spoiled.
Right.
So you got to find that woman that kind of became good looking, like when she maybe hit 25 or 30, you know.
And how do you get to that?
I'm going to give him examples. I'm going to show him pictures.
How does he say this to this prospective date?
If you see a beautiful woman, you say, can I see your yearbook picture, please?
Right, and see what people wrote.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more Kevin Nealon and Spike's Car Radio. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Yep. Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You know it. You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet, so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True cash offer not available in all areas.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
All right, we're back here with Kevin Nealon. Thank you for doing the show, by the way.
I
love having this.
I grew up
listening
to this show. I love the show.
Really? And by the way, you know, I want to get into hiking with Kevin. I saw you do stand-up recently at a water charity. I don't know what it was.
Waterkeeper.
Yeah. What does Waterkeeper do, bud?
Waterkeeper it's a kind of an organization that kind of makes sure that all of our waters are clean and corporations aren't, you know, polluting them.
And there were a lot of great comedians there. Sarah Silverman.
Paul Reiser
was there. But, you know.
Arsenio.
Who's that?
Arsenio.
My agent is a part of it. And I went with my business partner who runs my production company with me. And you were the person that blew us away that night.
Is that right?
I knew you did stand up, right? But I didn't think that it was as good as what I saw, right? I just, when Kevin Nealon came out, I thought, I wasn't quite sure you had an act. I was like,
really?
Oh, Kevin Nealon, he's mostly an actor, you know, mostly,
That's
you know,
funny.
Comedic actor, but he's going to do stand up. I kind of get a sense of what he's going to try and do. And then you came out right from the dot and you were funny in the first sentence. Something Steve Martin recommends, by the way.
Yeah.
They forget about this, hello, how is everybody doing shit.
Yeah. People come out and say, I'm really excited to be here. Guess what? I'm not excited to be here. I'd rather be home.
Right. And you also were saying, like, I know you're really happy. Hello, everybody. I know you're really happy to see me. You know, and right away, the audience was laughing. And then the act from there just it was so good that I called Jerry the next day.
Is that right?
I said, Kevin Nealon. He goes, he's a great stand-up. I go, how do I not know this? I go, he crushed it.
he crushed it. Is that something that's always been in that condition, that act? Or is it my imagination that it's in a new, better, great place?
No, I mean, it's stand-up.
It's
hard. My forte.
Okay.
It's all I ever wanted to do. It's why I went out to L.A.
Right.
Connecticut, is to do stand-up.
But are you out there every weekend
yeah.
now working really hard?
I've never stopped doing
stand-up.
You
never stopped?
Wow. Always. When I was on SNL, I'd be doing it the off weeks and in the clubs around town. And I've been doing it for like 40 years now. And so, yeah.
Well, you really crushed it. It was, I don't want to belabor the point, but it was, I was like, boy. Wow. Let's start booking
you.
Stadiums. Let's go. Let's start making some money. Madison Square Garden, four nights in a row.
But you know what's interesting, Spike, is you go on Netflix and everybody's got a special. I mean,
right.
I'm seeing comics I've never heard of before
right.
doing stand-up.
Yeah.
You really have – and I'm ready to do another special because I have enough material now because it's been about mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years since my last special, maybe 5 years even.
Right.
And but I don't want to just do a special if it's being thrown in the mix with everybody else, because you really need something now to stand apart.
Yes, you do.
I don't know if it can just be material, but you got to have something. I don't know whether it's the look or, I've seen some stand-up specials lately that I really like. I thought Sandler's was really good.
It was great. It had its own specific look, right?
Yeah.
It had its own specific thing that felt different than a stand-up special.
Yeah.
You're right. And I watch a lot of those, and what I see more often than not is a cheap stand-up special.
Yeah,
It looks like, oh, they're saving money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that, you're right. You don't want to be in that little pocket. You've got to find that little...
But I guess if you're really good, you'll rise above it.
I don't know. I think your thinking is in the exact right place. How do I preserve what I do as a stand-up but make it – differentiate it from everything else that's out
yeah.
there?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen people try different things, like Sarah Silverman did it in a very small room.
Mm-hmm.
Maria Bamford did it in her parents' living room with just her
right.
parents watching.
That's funny.
Chelsea Peretti did a cool one where she kept cutting to the audience. There were like a cat there and an mm-hmm. old man eating or whatever, But I don't know what it is. There's something I think I have to really put my thinking cap on and come up with something before.
Well, one thing that I feel like that I want from those stand-up specials is a more premium experience. So I'd love you to take me to London. I'd love you to take me to Australia. I'd love to see you doing your stand-up special in a special place.
What about doing my stand-up special as I hike?
No, you're not going to get any laughs there.
I had an audience follow me that were laughing?
Tell us about the new YouTube series, Hiking with Kevin. Is it new? It's been on for a few years, right?
Well, this is my second season.
I
never even planned on having seasons. But the first last year I started hiking and I did 31 episodes of hikes. And I thought maybe I should start doing seasons so, I can like can some hikes instead of like going from week to week and trying to get somebody.
Right.
Because people are difficult sometimes with their schedules and they're flaky and they don't call you back. And
I know, but
they cancel at the last minute.
This is the perfect type format for that because you can do it when you're both available, right? You don't have to be in a studio at 4:30
exactly.
every day, right?
Yeah, and I find a trail that's close to them. I say, tell me your favorite trail or what's close to you. I'll send an Uber for you, or I'll pick you up, or I'll meet you there, whatever you want to do. I'll have water. And now I'm like second season. I got some swag bags. I got a little backpack with some protein bars, t-shirts, hats, selfie
stick.
So
what do? You take a hike for 40 minutes.
About an hour. Or if they don't have that much time, then we go for 40 minutes or whatever, half hour.
You chit-chat while you're out of breath.
Out of breath. It should be called Celebrities Out of Breath. But it's basically, I started with Matthew Modine.
Okay.
I called him up. He's an actor. And I said, hey, Matt, you want to go for a hike? He goes, sure. So we're going for a hike. And I just wanted to hike with him. And then my cell phone. I was holding my cell phone.
You're holding your cell phone? That's the
cameraman? On that hike, yeah. So I thought of a funny bit. As we're hiking, it was really steep, and we were both out of breath, and we were talking. I thought, this would be funny if I was interviewing you, and we're both so out of breath, mm-hmm. we couldn't understand the question or the answer. So I videotaped that, and that was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the way down, I started asking him other questions, and I videotaped them. I said, what if you turned down? What do you regret that you turned down in your life, and career-wise? And he smiled. He goes, you wouldn't believe what I turned down. I turned down coming off of Full Metal Jacket.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big movie. He turned down Back to the Future, the Michael J. Fox role, Big, the Tom Hanks role, Charlie Sheen, Wall Street.
Wow.
And Top Gun, the Tom Cruise role.
Wow.
I said, you idiot. We both laughed, you know, we both laughed. And I aired it on my Instagram. I started airing it on Twitter and Instagram. Like, there were only 2 minute segments or a minute. And then Stern loved the show, Howard Stern. He goes, you should make them longer. And I started thinking about that. And I created a YouTube channel called Hiking with Kevin.
Did Howard call you up?
No, but he talked about it on the air.
He did.
You know, and then I went and I did his interview a few times and we talked about it then too.
Has there been a role that you turned down like that? Where you go?
No, I take everything. I'm like Whoopi Goldberg. I take everything.
now, when you do the show, right? So YouTube is giving you some money. They've got. Have you been?
No, they're not giving me. I mean, you do the monetization thing, but you get very little money. They put
so this is something you pay for and you make. This
I don't even pay for it. I mean, I bought the camera and I said my camera. It started with my cell phone at the end of a selfie stick, and then people were complaining it was too shaky.
I see.
You know, they say, you got money. Get a you know, a stabilizer, you know, steady cam.
Nice? Yeah, free entertainment. Gimbal. Here, let me complain.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I got a newer iPhone that had a kind of built-in kind of stabilizer. And then somebody from Evo Gimbals, they call me, and they had a they put together a rig for me with a GoPro and I had a cell and a microphone. That was the other problem. The external mic on an iPhone 10, they don't have one. And the other ones, just the mic picks up so much wind.
Wind, right.
Like I was hiking with Michael Keaton. And I couldn't do half of the hike. I couldn't post it because it was like.
Yeah. Right. That's what we get. Right.
Yeah. So I got this new GoPro with the external mic on it now and this very lightweight carbon, like, you know, selfie stick. So I use that. And that's been pretty good. But there's no LED screen. You can't see what you're shooting. So
we
it's kind of estimated.
We have to get a cameraman in shape. Guy who's in shape, who can walk backwards.
That won't last very long.
And hold a boom at the same time, or even a boom end. Because this is reminding me, I'm flashing back to when Jerry started Comedian Cigars Getting Coffee.
Yeah.
And he's saying, I'm doing this thing, I'm paying for it myself, it's kind of a mess, but I'm getting good guests. And, you know, I've done a bunch of them, and I feel like I've done it, and I'm not sure it's going anywhere. And I was just going, make 100 of these.
Yeah.
And you're going to make $100 million because this is what everybody wants.
Yeah.
And this is now a new, more, a different version. You've got your own thing happening that's very Kevin Nealon. And yeah, you got to keep doing it. You've got to keep making these and you got to build out the production a little bit. And why aren't we getting YouTube Red involved? Why aren't we getting them?
Well, actually, we have a meeting with Comedy Central next week to pitch it. They like it. But
everybody, every network that I'm going in to meet with, and we meet with them every week to see what they're looking for, is saying we'd like our own version of Comedians in Cars, but not obviously Comedians and Cars. We're not looking for that. But every network right now is looking for that.
Really?
Yeah. Because these things, they're evergreen. You've got not only a star like yourself, but a star usually as your guest.
Yeah.
And it sells around the world.
Yeah.
Around the world.
What people like about this is, and I have to be careful not to bring the production value up too much, they like the rawness of it.
Right.
Like sometimes we're out of frame.
Yes.
Sometimes
you can do that with regular cameras.
Yeah.
That's
we're
still going to break
though.
The fourth wall. You're still going to see the edges. But if you up the production value, now we're watching it everywhere where we watch TV. You've had guests, Judd Apatow. I'm trying to get Judd to walk up the street and come to my house and do this show. I've got a lot to talk to him about. Bob Odenkirk, Jimmy Kimmel, Dana Carvey, David Spade, Fred Armisen.
Yeah.
Tough guy to get. And then you have Bobby Kennedy Jr.
Yeah.
How does he fit into this lineup?
I'm not doing just comedians. This is like notable people. People that are interesting, I think. Bobby Kennedy, Brad Paisley Jr. You know, Brad Paisley, the singer, songwriter. I had the woman that swam from Cuba to Key West, Diana Nyack.
Why did you have her on?
Because I thought she was interesting, and I wanted to hear get people that I'm interested in. I want to hear about her swim and the sharks and all that.
That's why people are going to love this show. This is the point of view we're talking about. What bit her on the way to Florida?
Box jellyfish.
Box jellyfish.
That was the worst, more than sharks. She swam without a shark cage. And they had the electrical sensors under her, so the sharks would be deterred. But if they were really hungry, they'd go through it. But the jellyfish would just glom onto her face.
Oh.
Like this was her fifth attempt, I think, or fourth attempt when she made it. But she made it because she had a special prosthetic face mask built before her swim, so the jellyfish couldn't sting her. And she had goggles, and she had a mouth guard put in so the tentacles wouldn't go into her mouth when she swam through these schools of box jellyfish. So,
And so they would just kind of like a mask just go across the face. And what are these electrodes that keep sharks away?
It's a shark. It's like this cable that goes under her, and there's people in kayaks with holding each end, you know. And she said at night you could see the shark's eyes glowing. So this is the stuff that interests me, you know?
God,
I really like that kind of
stuff. That's horrifying. Yeah. No, that sounds fascinating.
But I'll do like athletes, you know? I'd love to hike with, you know, any athlete that's, mm-hmm. that's interesting, and musicians and a newscaster, anything. YouTube stars. I'm going to hike with David Drobic next week.
And who's he?
He's like a big YouTube star.
Right, right. What and who is your dream guest for this show, for your hiking
Well,
show?
I'd love to get Oprah Winfrey and, you know, Barack Obama, you know, anybody Mark Maron's had on.
That would be a good hike.
Yeah.
That would definitely be a good
hike. But there's plenty of people, but I've kind of gone through all my friends. You know, Jack Black did a great job, and Conan.
Is he in any shape to hike, Jack Black?
Interesting. You know, the people you think that are not in good shape are in good shape and vice versa.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I went with Bobcat and I got him a coffee. And we just stayed flat. There's a lot of flatliners. They'll say, right. like Spade was flatliners.
Yeah.
You can't even be like 1% inclined with Spade. You know, he'll say, I got to go. But
Bobcat's great. We had him here too. Yeah. He's excellent.
Yeah, he's
really
great.
A pleasure meeting him.
But, you know, Chelsea Handler was in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was a good hiker. And Molly Shannon, I mean, she left me behind in the dust.
We're working with Molly right now on a show. And
that's
I had
so
not
sweet.
Worked with her, but she is the best.
She's so nice.
She's the best.
Yeah.
We were going to get her in here too, Will, right? Weren't we? There was some show that she's doing on YouTube.
Yeah, we were trying.
She's so busy, though.
She is.
She's doing like 10 shows, I think.
But she is just really wonderful. Again, another SNLer who you just really love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's quickly, before you go, CBS Men with a Plan. You guys are back February 4th. What do we have in store
Third
this
season
for this show?
Third season, February 4th. It's I play Matt LeBlanc's older brother in the show.
Mm-hmm.
We have a construction company, and we're both living, you know, we both have our families, and we're trying to deal and make things work. And my character, I always seem to play these characters that are kind of, you know, lazy and mm-hmm. looking to get away with the easiest route. You know, Weeds, I played Doug Wilson, same mm-hmm. kind of character, just looking for a good time.
And you guys went 7 seasons on that show, right?
8 seasons.
8 seasons,
yeah,
wow.
That's a lot of pot.
Yeah.
And
do you smoke pot?
No.
No.
But Man with a Plan, it's a fun show. Liza Snyder's on it, Matt Cook, really good actors, and the writing is great. This third season, I mean, it's really evolved the show. I mean, it's always been good, but this particular season especially. And Matt LeBlanc, I mean, I've never worked with anybody who's so knowledgeable about sitcoms and characters and structure and, you know, his intuition about whether
really?
Something's working or not. I mean, I thought I knew a lot about sitcoms because
right.
I've done quite a few in my time. But he is just, I mean, things you wouldn't even think about, he's on it.
Really?
And the other interesting thing was when I first got on the show, Jim Burrows, the first season, was directing.
Yep.
James Burrows. And when I first moved out to Los Angeles, I was auditioning for a show. I got 5 callbacks. And the two producers looked at each other and said, "We're not getting any closer than this." And I thought, I got a job, man. I'm 25, 26 years old. And I walked out, and Jim Burrows was the director on that one. And 2 weeks goes by, I don't hear from them. And finally, I hear they're looking for somebody older for the part. And it was Sam Malone from Cheers, Ted Danson
right.
part.
Oh, my God.
And they went with Ted Danson. But then I saw Jim Burrows on this show, and we both smiled and remembered how close it was.
And then you sucked him.
Yeah.
Said, that's for not hard. What's that?
I took him down.
It's is this the first time you've worked on a sitcom like that in front of an audience?
No.
No.
No, no. I've done, you know, when I first got off SNL, I did a sitcom that DreamWorks did. Steven Spielberg was their first foray into sitcoms. It was called Champs with
right.
Timothy Busfield and Ed Marinaro.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other
I know
people.
Ed. I know Ed.
And then I did another one with Eugene Levy and Richard Lewis called Hiller and Diller. That was mm-hmm. with Imagine. And that lasted like 8 episodes. And
now you guys have a big success. You're in your third season.
Third
here.
Season.
You
yeah.
know, the audience, I miss working in front of that audience because it doesn't lie. You know, everybody thinks, so. Oh, the audience, it's a laugh track. And yes, in editing, you can fill in some laughs. But if you're being honest, you generally don't do that. What you're doing more, and I'm sure what you're doing on your show, is listening closely to what is working and what's not. Because that audience does not laugh at stuff that doesn't work, right?
And I'll tell you, the most important job on that show is the warm-up comics.
Yeah.
They get
yeah.
the audience going.
Yep.
And I've seen good and bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's the person who should be getting the most money.
On mean, the show?
For
you
5
know,
hours.
Matt LeBlanc is a big car guy, too.
He is.
He hosted Top Gear, and I've seen him bombing around in the canyons and GT2 RSs and all sorts of things.
Oh, he loves Ducatis. He loves motorcycles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, never got into that stuff, right?
Not really. But, I mean, you give him a power tool and he's happy. That's like a pacifier for him.
Yeah.
You know? Or even like a rag, an oil rag. You give him that and he's happy.
That's how you keep you just
That's
give him a rag.
If he's in a bad mood, I always keep a little oil rag in my back pocket. I let him hold on to it.
That's really cool. Yeah. Well, man, look, thank you for coming in here. This
my
is
pleasure,
great.
Man.
My favorite part of researching you was on your IMDb page that said your trademarks. You know what your trademarks
no.
are? Your towering height and your deep baritone voice. That
is, is it baritone?
That's what it says.
People say I have a good radio voice.
Your towering height and your deep baritone voice.
Are you sure that wasn't Brad Garrett?
No. That's why we love Kevin Nealon.
Towering. Somebody, Wikipedia said my downside was I'm a smoker. And
you're
I never
smoked. Smoker? What?
That's Wikipedia.
They're probably joking about weeds. That's probably what they're saying. Anyway, you can catch up with Kevin on Men with a Plan, which returns to CBS February 14th. And the show that I'm going to be watching nonstop is YouTube series Hiking with Kevin, with guests like Judd Apatow, Bob Odenkirk, Jimmy Kimmel, Dana Carvey, David Spade, Fred Armisen, Bobby Kennedy Jr., the lady
Caitlyn Jenner.
Caitlyn Jenner, the lady who was jellyfish stung in the face. I'm
going
to start with that one. And who do we have coming up? Any big names coming up?
We have a lot of people coming up, but I like to make it a surprise.
Okay.
I tease the audience. They got to guess who it is.
Well, there you go. Well, Kevin, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll check out Kevin Nealon at kevinnealon.com, and you can find me on Instagram. That's where I have the most fun. We'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com. Move over, YouTube. The Collider Network is now on Podcast One. Get your fix for any of your pop culture needs with shows like Collider Factory, Heroes, Movie Talk, Jedi Council, One-on-One with Christian Harloff, and Movie Trivia Schmodown. Download and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One today. And remember to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.